Are more people coming?
Oh, yeah.
The little open, so more people will be able to bring chairs in.
Who's that?
Oh, more people are coming. I'm sorry. Come. Shall we start? What are we doing? Whatever you tell me. I told them that the one good thing about the Shia that everyone would agree to is that it has to end at the quarter six. Welcome. And just to shift a bit, if you don't mind, thank you very much. Just leave some room. Is that air conditioner on over there? The one in the back? I will attempt to overview some of the issues that relate to two aspects of Eretz Yisrael. One is the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, what's called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and the other is the three oaths that the Gemara that Pirkei Aleph speaks about. The Gemara discusses six oaths, but let's talk about the three oaths. There's one to talk about actually in that issue as well. And I'll mention to you by way of introduction, I actually Xeroxed it many years ago. I don't know if you go around, perhaps you do a little bit, and if you walk around the city of Yerushalayim, you'll see what they call, the term that's used is Pashkevilyas. Pashkevilyas refer to these notices that are plastered on the walls. I don't think that, as far as I know, I was just in America, just came back this morning, I don't think that they advertise all types of things using what they call Pashkevilyas. Are you familiar with Pashkevilyas? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
In Be'er Sharim, all the walls are plastered with all kinds of information. Sometimes advertisements, where they want to advertise a particular product. Sometimes you'll have actually pretty strong statements, emphatic statements about different positions. Sometimes of a political nature, of a religious nature. And sometimes you even have, shall we say, how shall we put it, individuals who are found on those pashkevilyas that are being whitewashed. That term can be used in a number of ways. That is to say that they want to attack someone or assault someone, and so they do it on a pashkevilya, because they have an issue with that person. Okay, the reason why I mention that, because among the pashkevilyas that you will see in Be'er Sharim, there is the following. I'll just translate part of it. That they speak about this government, the Israeli government, as being a government of kofrim. Kofrim are non-believers, atheists, agnostics, and the like. Why is that so? Because the Almighty is opposed to living in Eretz Israel. Or I should say, the Almighty is opposed to the government of the State of Israel. Why is the Almighty opposed to the government of the State of Israel? Because of the three oaths. The three oaths that were administered based on the Pasuk Shir HaShirim, Hishvati Eschem Benos Yerushalayim, and the three oaths are, I imagine you're familiar with them, look in Kufi Dal, the Abi Gemara, or if you're not by heart, it's even better. The Gemara says, number one, Shelo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma.
How do we derive these oaths from that Pasuk?
That's an excellent question. A question that's bothered me for years. So you have to actually, I'm not really addressing that issue right now, but it has to be addressed. I'm here for Shlita. It's 100% right. Where did the Chazal see it from this cooking? Okay, this needs explication. There are those who deal with this, including the Ksav HaKabbalah is very into this. The Malbim is into it. And there are a few others, actually, I can refer you to who discuss this issue. It's not my problem right now. I'm less concerned about that. That would need a special shiur, of which I'm not equipped so that at this point you really deal with it. But the reason why I mention this by way of introduction, because the three oaths are, number one, Shelo Yalu Yisrael B'chomba. What does that mean? How do you translate that? That we should not do what? Forcefully try to enter Israel. Number two, Shelo Yimrudu B'musa Olam. We should not rebel against the nations of the world. And number three, that they also have a shua, namely the non-Jews.
They should enslave us.
Exactly, they should enslave us or oppress us excessively, unduly. Now, right away, you see from the nature of these three shuas, and we'll discuss it hopefully a little bit later, are these shuas quoted by the Rambam or by the Shulchan Aruch? As far as you know, la halacha, is it found in Shulchan Aruch? Is it found in Rambam? The answer is no. So automatically we assume that this is what they call an agadic statement. Agadic statement means it's not a statement that's found in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, for example, it tells us we have to put on tefillin every day. Shulchan Aruch tells us we have to wear tzitzis. Shulchan Aruch tells us we have to observe Shabbos. It does not tell us about these three oaths. And generally the Rambam is a good source for this, and the Rambam does not bring it, or does it brought in Shulchan Aruch, and that tells an indication that perhaps it's not necessarily something that we have to comply with for halacha. That's reason number one. Reason number two, that's mentioned as well, is quite simple. Did the non-Jews, did they keep their part of the bargain? Did they oppress us, would you say, in the course of the millennia, unduly or excessively? And how do you define that? What does it mean, Yosef Midai? What does that mean? What definition of that? That also needs attention. But I would say that they did not keep their part of the bargain, and therefore automatically, we don't have to get our part of the bargain. That's not my Kiddush, that's already mentioned by Zodi Achronim. And number three, I would point out to you, and this is something which of course is mentioned by the Yor Sameach, by Rav Meir Simcha, I just mentioned before to Rabbi Yifrit Shlita that he has a famous letter, that Rabbi Meir Simcha, the author of one of the great commentaries both on Chumash and on Shas and on the Rambam, so the Rabbi Meir Simcha Kohen Midvins, the Meshach Chochma, writes the following. This is the third reason why we're not obligated to comply with these three shuas. And he says, because there were several conferences, the San Remo conference, and then subsequently the Balfour, I assume you're familiar with, the Balfour Declaration, where essentially the non-Jews, the non-Jewish world, in terms of League of Nations, the United Nations, they established the State of Israel. Is that not correct? I think that's a historical fact, a historical reality. And as a result, it shows that they acquiesced to the founding of the State of Israel, to the government of the State of Israel, and therefore there's no reason why we're obligated, we're bound by these three oaths. There are other factors as well, I just mentioned them very briefly, and these are the three factors that are critical as far as this issue is concerned. But now let's start with the Mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and we'll begin actually with the Mishnah of Daf Kuf Yud that you're all familiar with. The Mishnah tells us pretty clearly that if a husband wants to make Aliyah, and his wife does not want to make Aliyah, or vice versa, she wants to make Aliyah and he does not want to make Aliyah. By the way, not an uncommon situation. I'm involved in this matter already in the last 40 years, at least 15 to 20 times, minimally, probably even more than that. So what does the Mishnah tell us? What's the halacha, which is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, which is quoted by the Rambam? Namely, what's the din? Let's say the husband wants to make Aliyah and his wife does not want to. What's the din? He has the right to divorce her. And not pay her? That's right, not pay her the tuba. That's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah goes further. It says the same thing applies to what? To Yerushalayim. He wants to live in Beit Shemesh. She wants to live in Yerushalayim. I have to live in Beit Shemesh. But luckily my wife wants to live in Beit Shemesh as well. Only because we couldn't afford Yerushalayim. But anyway, so let's assume that one wants to live in Beit Shemesh, the other wants to live in Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah applies the same halacha. Comes along Tesis, one of the most famous positions. Look at that Kuf Yud of the days. Tosis writes, Tosis number 3 on this daf. Hu Omer Lalo. You see that? What does Tosis write? Eino Noeg Bizman Hazeh. There's no mitzvah of what? Of Aliyah today. You hear that? There's no mitzvah of Aliyah. Tell that to the Jewish agency. Tell it to Nefesh B'Nefesh. Who else should we tell it to? To all the American Jews who made Aliyah, to all other Jews who made Aliyah. Why not? This says, Deika Sakanas Drochin. Translate that. The roads are dangerous. What does that mean? Last week, I was at a Kedushin for someone in my shul in Maarat HaMachpelah. You know Maarat HaMachpelah in Hebron? Is Hebron dangerous?
Yeah.
Okay. Is the World Trade Center area dangerous? Don't mind me, I just get a little bit wicked from time to time. But anyway, I would say that, how do you define danger? What's the definition? Is Yerushalayim dangerous? Is Teaneck dangerous? Teaneck, New Jersey?
No.
No. You sure about that? Nothing ever happened in Teaneck? Nothing, any mishap, Chas V'Shalom, not that I'm wishing any mishap to occur anywhere? How do you define danger? But Tosfos says, it's not knowing today, Dikas Takanas Drachim. But Tosfos goes further. Look, if you have, oh, you don't have a good monk service. Those who have a Kuf Yudah Beis, Tosfos number 3, Vayomer Aben Ochayim, this is a famous Aben Ochayim Kohen, that he contends, Da'achshav Eino Mitzvah Lodur Be'eretz Yisrael. There's no mitzvah today to live in Eretz Yisrael. Why? He doesn't give the reason that's mentioned by Tosfos at the very beginning, because of Sakonas Drachim. But rather, Ki Yishkama Mitzvah Satzuyas Baretz. There are a number of mitzvahs that depend upon the real state of Eretz Yisrael, the Kama Onchin, and a number of punishments. Deinam Yichol Mizorah Bayim Olam and Aleim. We're not able to what? To be careful regarding these matters. What is he talking about? What specific mitzvah would you say is not able to be operative today, that Tosfos is referring to something that depends on the real state of Eretz Yisrael? What would be an example?
Shemitah,
excellent. Means when Shemitah is not relevant, does that mean that in about another week or so, when Shemitah begins here in Eretz Yisrael? So what does Tosfos mean? It's not relevant. It's not relevant at what level? At a level of?
Daraisa,
excellent. At a level of Daraisa, it's not relevant. Perhaps it's only relevant to Rabbanan. That might be understanding of Tosfos. It's not so clear what Tosfos means. But anyway, that's what Tosfos writes over here. So therefore, there are two reasons why, according to Tosfos, there's no mitzvah aliyah today. One is because of sakana drachim, and the other is because of what he calls that mitzvah satzulias baretz and onshin, that we can't somehow comply with them, and therefore there's no mitzvah of aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara also, however, does not seem to be in agreement with him, because the Gemara says on the bottom of this page, seven lines from the up from the bottom of the page. I have two brothers who live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm the last to come to Eretz Yisrael. I'm a recent newcomer to Eretz Yisrael, been 20 years. My brothers are here, double that amount, and a bit more than that. So I have a brother who lives in Chadera. He's a rabbi in a hospital in Chadera. So every time I would call him, which is rather often, so the first thing he would tell me was this Gemara. He was in Chadera. You ever heard of Chadera? Anybody ever heard of Chadera here? Where is that located on the map? Is it north of Yerushalayim, south of Yerushalayim? North of Yerushalayim. It's up there. So my brother would tell me that here's how the phone conversation would begin. I would say hello, shalom aleichem, and then he would say the following: Yolam yadur adam be'eretz Yisrael apilu bechadera, va'al yadur b'Toronto apilu b'akim shavu b'yehudim. This is exactly more or less a paraphrase of the Gemara. That's what he called me. That was the conversation. That's how it began. You better live in Chadera rather than live in Toronto. I lived in Toronto, Canada, for 10 years. And even though Toronto, Canada, you might argue, but here, Sheru, Israel, many, many Jews, wonderful Jews living in Toronto, better live in Chadera. Chadera is not the most observant city, per se, even though there are many, many observant Jews living in Chadera. But that's what my brother used to tell me. And as you undoubtedly can clearly understand from the Gemara, that what is the Gemara saying? The Gemara goes further. Anyone who lives in Chutz Haaretz, what does the Gemara compare to? Someone who's an idolater. That's not so nice. Not so nice to worship idols. But of course, what's the key word? Ki'ilu. What does it mean, ki'ilu? Like. Not literally. We don't mean that. Literally, someone who lives in Teaneck, New Jersey, is Debbie Abinazara. Ki'ilu Abinazara. Where do you live?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Doesn't mean he's literally worshiping idols. God forbid to say something like that. Ki'ilu! Oh, wait, and then the quote is looking by David HaMelech.
And what way is the
ki'ilu? Okay, kasha. There are many kashas in this Gemara. The kashas of every shlita is asking are too good to be answered. I don't have the capacity to answer them. Some of them I can't answer, but he's asking a good question. What does it mean, ki'ilu? I'm not answering that question. I can't prepare with what I want to say. Hopefully I'll be able to say some of it. But these questions need to be addressed, and they're very good questions. The Gemara then goes further and tells the following story about two lines at the bottom of the page. Very fascinating story. But Rab Zera. Rab Zera is a Talmud of whom? A student of Rabbi Yehuda. And guess what? He tried to avoid Rabbi Yehuda. Basically, he ran from him. Why did he run from him? Because Rabbi Yehuda has the following position. Rabbi Yehuda says that once we entered into Golus, once we were exiled, you can't leave Babel. You cannot leave Teaneck, New Jersey. You hear that? You must stay in Teaneck. As it says in the Pasuk, Teaneck you vow, v'shama you, I don't pump to yourself, that's what the Pasuk says. Doesn't it say that in Yirmiyahu? Babel, Teaneck, what difference does it make? says you're going to come to Bava, and then you're going to remain there till Hashem will, shall we say, revisit your case. Tinek is a beautiful city, a growing city, but literally a beautiful city. I've been there a fair number of times.
I like it too.
Baruch Hashem. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, does Rabbi Yehuda say that you're not allowed to make Aliyah? So what's going on here? On the one hand, we have what we call in simple English, conflicting desiderata. We have here what seems to be conflicting information. On the one hand, the Gemara says, a person, the Olam, Yadur Adav Eretz Yisrael, you should live in Israel. My brother said, I should live in Chadera, rather than live in Toronto. On the other hand, the Gemara calls a position, for someone who leaves Babel to go to Eretz Yisrael, over in Basay. So, how does Rashi clearly, in several places, why you're not allowed to leave Babel? So what does Rashi say? What's in Babel? What's in Teaneck, New Jersey, that attracts you, that you like so much? The answer is, there are yeshivas in Teaneck, New Jersey. Wonderful yeshivas. I don't know all the yeshivas that are there. There are several of them, no? Yeah. Number one?
Well, in Teaneck?
Yes.
Or near Teaneck?
In Teaneck, near Teaneck. Well, they might not be me, though. Who cares? Yeah. Wonderful yeshivas. What are they?
TABC.
It's a wonderful yeshiva. Rabbi Adler Shlita. Correct? What else? Other yeshivas there. Aren't there other places?
Rish.
Baruch Hashem. What else? Echal HaTorah. Not so familiar with it. Okay. I say that. I don't know all the yeshivas in Tidak. I'm sorry. I apologize. But anyway, that's what Rashi here comments. Rashi says, Yesham yeshivas ha-mabitzos Torah Tomid. By the way, this Rashi is a famous Rashi. Because this Rashi is found in the letter of the Chazon Ish. The famous letter of the Chazon Ish. He quotes actually this Rashi that the Chafetz Chaim lived, he didn't live in Teaneck, as far as I know. Where the Chafetz Chaim lived is a city called?
Radin.
And the Chafetz Chaim perhaps wanted to make Aliyah, did not make Aliyah. At that time, many of the yeshivas were in Europe. The strongest yeshivas were in Europe. They didn't make Aliyah, they didn't come there themselves. Apparently, by the way, what one sees from this is something also parenthetically quite interesting. That when you take, shall we say, two values, namely Torah, and another value called Eretz Yisrael. How is that exactly that to be weighed on a scale? So what's the answer? Which one seems to take precedence?
According to Rabbi Yehuda.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, and according to Rashi's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda?
Torah.
And according to the other opinion of Rav Zera, he would say that Eretz Yisrael overrides Torah? I'm just asking a question. Fundamental question. There are those who feel Torah essentially overrides Torah Ibn Alas. And there are many passionate Zionists who feel the other way. Israel, Ibrahimus. Israel overrides everything. It's a very fascinating issue. It's a halachic issue. It's also a conceptual issue, philosophic issue, theological issue. No, you must give. So it needs more attention. I'm just mentioning the issue. Now, the reason why I say this, again, is because this halach actually happens to be quoted by, of all people, imagine, just amazing. The Gemara actually has a story. The Gemara in Suvah is actually a Kufshid Aleph from the Aleph. I imagine you saw the story. The Gemara tells you where is that story to be found. Hahu Gavra, the Nafala Yavama Bechuzo. What a story the Gemara tells us. What happened over there? Anyone remember the story? With the Yavama? What's the Yavama?
Yiva.
What happened in that situation?
Someone's brother died.
Correct,
and his wife.
Excellent.
But they live. His brother lives with Laura.
Excellent. So what happened? They came to Rav Chanina. And the question was, should I go ahead and be Abimah? What was the answer? Look at the answer the Gemara says. Achim Nasa Kusis Umeis Baruch Hamakom Sharono. Who Yerin Achimov? Wow, what a statement. What did the Gemara say? Could you just, in your own words, translate it?
That you can't, because it's like the person, like a kote, like someone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, like someone who does like a bodhisattva. So he did it. So and Hashem killed him for that.
And Baruch Hamakom Sharago means like, Yashakayach. Who they give me Yashakayach to?
Hashem.
The Almighty gets Yashakayach. For what? For killing him. And now who Yerarachlo? He's going to go after him. So what do you see in this Gemara? That the issue of leaving Eretz Yisrael is so great that even the Kiyum HaMitzvah of what of Yibum, that Kiyum HaMitzvah is what is Nidche. That Kiyum HaMitzvah is deferred. That's what the Gemara says. Okay, now this needs a lot of attention, but I just wanted to mention that the Rambam, interestingly enough, you notice that there's a little Rambam. I don't know if you saw the Rambam over here. The Rambam actually quotes this Gemara, the Halacha, in Mishnah Torah. Okay, I'm not going to get into this issue because this needs separate attention. The issue of leaving Teaneck, New Jersey to come to Eretz Yisrael. This is how I call the issue. Bavel Yubo, etc., etc. But the Rambam actually If I were to ask you, does the Rambam count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael? So one of the famous issues that the Ramban has with the Rambam is that the Rambam forgot to count this issue. The Ramban often takes issue with the Rambam on many issues, and one of the issues that the Ramban takes issue with the Rambam, he forgot to count this mitzvah. And the Ramban, by the way, is very into the mitzvah of Aliyah, very into the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. There were two actually Rishonim who are very well known. Probably the Ramban is the most well known. There's another Rishon who was also great, Baal Machshava, a great philosopher, who was also very into Yishuv Eretz, and that is Rabbi Halevi Guzari. That's a very fundamental work that you have to be familiar with. I'll just read to you part of the Ramban. The Ramban quotes the Gemara in Tzuvos. The Ramban first sees Tukim in Chumash that we're obligated. I'm not going to get into the details of the Ramban. It needs a lot of explication. What exactly his position is, what's a Chavasibur, what's a Chavasyachid. But the Ramban clearly holds there's a mitzvah aliyah, an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew is obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban brings a number of interesting proofs, primarily from the Gemara in Tzuvos. He says, I'm reading to him the Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Dalet, Ki HaMitzvah Shachacham Matlinim Ba, Behudiras Eretz Yisrael, he quotes this Gemara in Tzuvos, Kol HaYotzi Menu B'dar V'chutz Haaretz, anyone who lives, who leaves Eretz Yisrael, and goes to Tina, New Jersey, Ki Yilu Arbe Abed Azara, no money. It's as if he is, shall we say, guilty of idol worship. And he quotes the Pesukim, and Chazal say that there is a mitzvah Seilu Doros, even Bizman HaGolus, even during the days of Golus. However, those who are in support of the position that, shall we say, the mitzvah is not relevant anymore, that's the gentleman named Gilas Esther. Gilas Esther takes a position which is very famous in many circles, is quoted by great Chassidish Gedolei Yisrael, and that is a Sifrei. A Sifrei is a Medrash that tells us the following story. I'll read the story. The story reads, and the Ramban quotes it, but the Ramban does not quote the entire Sifrei. He's missing part of the Sifrei. That's what the Adonizer points out. There was a famous Admor, a famous Hasidic sage called Adonizer. You may have heard of him. The Admor Bisochachov, he was, Rav Soloveitchik was very fond of him. I have to be careful how I position myself now. He was very fond of him. He knew how to learn very well. He called him a Chassidish Briska. A Chassid was a Briska in terms of his learning. His learning prowess was tremendous. But anyway, the Ramban quotes the Sifrei. The Sifrei says the following story. Maisa Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezer, Rabbi Masi ben Chavash, Rabbi Hanina, Hanani ben Ochi, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Nassan, there were all these great Talmidei Chachamim, Shoyotzim Chutz La'aretz. They were what? Going to Eretz Yisrael, the Chutz La'aretz. Higiyu the Platya, they came to the border, Bizach Eretz Yisrael. They realized they're about to leave Israel, and they said to themselves, wow! And what happened? They began to cry. They began to cry, the Koru Bideyan, they tore their clothing. Because it's not so simple to leave Eretz Yisrael. The Koru HaMikra Hazeh, they said over the Pesukim in Dvarim, B'Rishta, B'Shavta, B'Shamat, Alasos, and they said, Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, Shkula, Kinei Kol HaMitzvahs, that Eretz Yisrael is equal to all the mitzvahs. And the Ramban writes here, when he defines the mitzvah, not just to live in Eretz Yisrael, but not to abandon it, not to let other nations conquer Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Ramban writes. It's Masha of the Ramban, that the mitzvah has two elements. One is Hachrim Tachrimim, you have to utterly destroy the nations occupied by Eretz Yisrael. And number two, not leave them any quarter in Eretz Yisrael. And the problem, however, here, of course, is that the Ramban quotes a Sifrei, and the Sifrei seems to imply that they were about to leave, they started crying, they tore their garments, it's a terrible thing, and they left Eretz Yisrael. That's the Mashmos of the Ramban. That's how many interpret the Ramban, so therefore there's a problem. But the Adonizer points out in the famous Tshuva, he writes over there that the Ramban did not cite part of the Sifrei. When they came to the realization they're about to leave Eretz Yisrael and they're crying bitter tears, what happens at the end of the Sifrei? The Chazu Ubodim Komam, they came back to Eretz Yisrael. They couldn't bear leaving Eretz Yisrael. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, you heard of Rabbi Soloveitchik? I'm slightly biased. Slightly. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. Except once in his lifetime, 1935. He was a candidate to be the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And he did not, whatever reason, there are reasons that are generally given, he did not become the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. Because they felt at that time he was a member of the Aguda party. Too right wing, yeshivish. That was Soloveitchik. At that point he was a member of the Aguda party. And so it was given to someone else. And he left Eretz Yisrael. He was here for a period of time, for a number of months he was here. I actually spoke to Rav Neria Zatzal, Rosh Yeshiva Kfar Oeh, famous yeshiva, probably one of the flagships of the yeshivot of the Zionist movement, and he was present when Rabbi Soloveitchik came in 1935. And he said, Rabbi Soloveitchik went to visit Rav Kook. That's how Rabbi Kook you heard about. Chief Rabbi, first Chief Rabbi of the State of Israel, a giant, an unbelievable giant. Rabbi Kook was on his deathbed. He was unfortunately that was the last year of his life. After Rabbi Kook spoke to Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said about Rabbi Soloveitchik, he has the neshama of his grandfather. Who was Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather? Rav Chaim Brisker, known as Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was in Balozhin. You heard of the yeshiva in Balozhin, the famous yeshiva in Balozhin. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was one of the Russian yeshiva in Balozhin with the Tzid, also very famous anyway. So Rabbi Kook said about the Rav means Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said about him, he has the soul of his grandfather. And he's going to be like Rav Chaim. That's what Rabbi Neria told me. I heard it from Neria personally. It's also written in one of his Svarim. Anyway, why am I telling you this story? The Rav never came back to Eretz Yisrael again. Of course, the question, of course, is how did he leave Eretz Yisrael? Akasha. That still remains somewhat of a question. But why did he come again? Because Rav Soloveitchik held, once you come to Eretz Yisrael, you can't leave. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. With the exception of, there's several reasons that you don't learn Exubis. What are the reasons you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for? Number one?
Work.
Number two?
Torah.
Excellent. Number three? What was that?
Get married.
Good, good. Excellent. Number four, anything else? I was mentioned. Number four, keep it away. Those are the four reasons you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. You're allowed to visit your parents Eretz Yisrael. There's a whole issue. A big machlokes among contemporary poskim. Can I leave Eretz Yisrael in order to see the Grand Canyon? What would you say? Is there something comparable to the Grand Canyon in this country?
Yes.
What is that?
The Maktesh.
The Maktesh. You haven't been there?
No.
Haven't been there? I would go today. You have to see it. Could you describe it to you?
It's amazing. It's a giant hollowed out crater.
Crater.
Almost.
You've been to the Grand Canyon?
No.
You've seen the pictures? Okay. So am I allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to see the Grand Canyon? The Tayel, to go make Teulim and what have you. So there, this is a big machlokes, because there's a question of the Eretz Yisrael. Not only that, especially one particular genre of Jew is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael more than anybody else. And who's that?
Kohanim.
Are there Kohanim in this room? I imagine there are a few. Wow, you have real problems. You can't go to Tumas Eretz Ha'amim. Eretz Ha'amim is Tomei. Tomei, even Teaneck, New Jersey. The hail of your Teaneck. The holy city of Teaneck. It's a beautiful city, it really is. They have the best bagels in the world. I'm telling you. You know which place I'm talking about? Correct? That's what Mickey Mark tells me. And he's a big mumche. I'm not such a mumche, but he's a mumche. Tremendous mumche. Wow, it's just piping, fresh, aromatic, succulent. I don't know how to describe it. Can't find any bagels like that anywhere else. Anyway, to make a long story short, so this is the machlokes between who and whom? Rob Dole Apuskin, that is what Rabbi Nevin Sol Shlita told me the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Asul La'azov et Ha'aretz L'tayel B'chutz Ha'aretz. You're not only Eretz Yisrael. However, Marenu Rabbeinu, Rabbi Lichtenstein Shlita, Hashem Shibimarach Yomav, the son of Lord Rabbi Soloveitchik, calls otherwise. Kach Shavadi Mipit Kotcha. And he had values too this way. That way, I'm not going to get into that issue. Because you put on the air conditioner, otherwise it's almost asphyxiate. You don't want the gentleman to asphyxiate. Okay, where are we up to? I just want to mention a few more things in the limited time that I have. So, this Rabban, the Sifrei that he quotes, the Avnezer points out, part of the Sifrei was not cited. Namely, they came back to Eretz Yisrael. They were so, literally, they were in such a state of, how shall we say, am I keeping putting you to sleep? I hope not. I'm trying not to, but I don't look like I'm very successful. You know, the reason why I'm very successful as a rabbi, it's because I have a synagogue in, not Teaneck, but in Beit Shemesh. So the reason why I'm so successful, because usually a sleeping pill takes a few minutes to work. I work instantaneously. So that's why they like it so much, the Balabaitan. They go to sleep immediately. Isn't that great? You don't have to take a sleeping pill. So I seem to be doing a great job. Anyway, the Sifrei, quoted by the Avinezer, who says that they went back. They decided not to leave. They can't leave. They cannot leave Eretz Yisrael. So the Avinez is out to show, obviously, that he does not agree with this. And it's interesting that if you take a look at the reasons why one might argue that, shall we say, there's no obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael today. There are several possible lines of argumentation. What is the three oaths, what I mentioned at the beginning of this year, and probably that's not relevant, as I pointed out. The second item is the Rabbi Chaim here, over here. It's Rabbi Chaim who claims that, what, it's not because of Sakonas Drochim, so the mitzvah is not relevant, and also because the mitzvah of Tzuyas Baaretz is not relevant. Argument number three is Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Yehudah, you violate a positive commandment if what? If you leave Babel, you leave the yeshivas in Babel, so how can I leave the yeshivas in Kenya? Or for that matter, I think there's some yeshivas in New York, that's what they told me, there are one or two. I heard from some of the Sephardim that there are Jews living in Flatbush. They told me that. I couldn't believe it. Are the Jews living in Flatbush? Is that right? A few, one or two. And so, and the rest are living in Deal, New Jersey. But anyway, so you have, Baruch Hashem. So you have people living in plenty of yeshivas in the United States, and that's argument number three. Argument number four, the Rambam does not count this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Is that true? That the Rambam does not count this mitzvah? The Abenezer points out it's not true. Not true at all. The Rambam does count it, but he doesn't count it, shall we say, directly over here. I'll just give you a few examples where the Rambam L'chura does count it. The Rambam, this Mishnah that we began with, Hakol Malon Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam quotes it. The Rambam says that there's a, shall we say, a disagreement between husband and wife regarding making Aliyah, not making Aliyah. What's the din? That the one who wants to make Aliyah, they have the upper hand. So clearly the Rambam does quote this. Secondly, there's a din that we learned also here in this Gemara that confuted the days. Namely, what's the halacha of a servant who, shall we say, what happens, what's the case with the servant that the Gemara brings, and what kind of a servant is this? What a tumult over here. But whatever, whichever servant it is right now, you know, talking about an Eved, what's the din by an Eved that's mentioned over here? Eved Ivri. What's the halacha? If an Eved, let's say, decides to go and make Aliyah, so what's the din? What about his master?
You can sell him.
Correct. Or you force the master, either has to sell him to someone who wants to make Aliyah to Israel, or the halacha is that you force the master to make Aliyah. That's a din of halacha. The Rambam also quotes his halacha. So the Rambam quotes many, what shall we say, allied dinim that clearly relate to the same issue. So obviously the Rambam says the Abenezer does believe in the mitzvah of Aliyah. Even though the language of the Rambam, those who I actually was open to hear, I was eventually speaking about this topic a number of times. As a matter of fact, Rav Shechter quotes in one of his svarim, he quotes actually this, how should we say, Shtikl Torah that Rav Soloveitchik said. And this Shtikl Torah I heard in the 60s from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik has a brother named Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. I don't know if you ever heard of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He's an outstanding person, outstanding Talmud Chacham, outstanding Gadol. Also was a Rashiva in YU for many, many years, and later on he started a yeshiva in Chicago. So he has a diyuk in Lashon HaRambam, and he also has a diyuk in the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvahs, and he had the Lashon of the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvahs. The Rambam is describing, if you will, or the Ramban is describing his opponent, allegedly the Rambam, that it's not a mitzvah, but rather what does the Ramban say according to the Rambam, as our Ramban so allegedly interpreted? It's a Yehud. Yehud means Haftocha. It's, that is the following. There are two ways of looking at the mitzvah. Either it's a chiyuv to live in Eretz Yisrael, and it's a chiyuv, everyone here right now has to, Baruch Hashem, you all made Aliyah, albeit temporarily, some of you, but hopefully it will become of a permanent nature. Correct? It's a chiyuv. You're obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. Or the other possibility is what they call, in halachi parlance, a mitzvah kiyumis. What does it mean, a mitzvah kiyumis? If you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have a kind of mitzvah. But it's not a chiyuv. There are two ways of looking at it. You know what I'm saying? Either it's a chiyuv, an obligation, just like you're obligated to put on tefillin, wear tzitzis, eat matzah, you're obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. Or the other possibility is that if you do so, you get a kiyum mitzvah. You are a kiyum mitzvah, unquestionably. But it's not a chiyuv. You understand what I'm saying? The distinction between the two. So that's how Rabban Soloveitchik and Rabbi Soloveitchik, that's how they interpreted the Rambam. The reason why they did not interpret the Rambam that's a chiyuv, because the Rambam does not say, he should have said like he said by Kriya Shema and by Shofar. For example, by Shofar, the Rambam says, mitzvah saseh lishmoa kol shofar. There's a positive obligation to hear the shofar. Or the Rambam says, mitzvah saseh liko Kriya Shema pamayim bayom. There's a positive commandment to say Kriya Shema twice a day. Does he say that about Eretz Yisrael? No. The Rambam quotes the language which the Gemara has. He paraphrases the language. Li'olam yadu adam Eretz Yisrael. Leo, what does that sound like? Is it an obligation? Is it a chiyuv? No. It's a kiyum ha-mitzvah. You get a mitzvah if you do so, but it's not necessarily an obligation. That's the way they want to interpret the Rambam. The Rambam apparently decided not to include this mitzvah. However, again, as I pointed out to you, the Abenezer notes from many, many Rambams, I didn't cite all of them, that the Rambam has this mitzvah in other contexts, whether it's through Avodim, whether it's through the din of Aliyah mentioned by a husband and wife, and on and on and on. I'm not going to mention all the rites that he brings, but it brings many, many riyas, and therefore, that's something that we have to consider. However, just in terms of what the Balei HaTosfos said here, this Tosfos and Daf Kuf Yud quoted that number one, there's sakanas drachim, number two, Chaim Cohen said that today there's no mitzvah, ki yeshkama mitzvah tzuyas baretz, and onshin, the people can't comply with them. I want to read to you a famous tshuva of the Ma'arit. Rabbi Shai Yitzrani has a famous tshuva, and in this tshuva he writes, that which Tosfos says, ein mitzvah ladur baretz Yisrael, this was inserted by a Talmud, not by the Balei HaTosfos, the Lav de Samchel Yiklal. You can't rely on this at all. It's totally unreliable, the statement. It's an interpolation. You know an interpolation? Insertion. That some Talmud, some student, put into the Tosfos, and it's not reliable. It has no foundation whatsoever. He has a long arichus. He writes on this Tosfos that he says, Yesh kama mitzvah atuyas v'kama onshin she'iyashu lizorbem divrei teimahem. These are words of wonderment. Why? You want to buy a piece of property in Israel, which is a good investment, but not all of you. You want to buy a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, can you do so? Of course you can. And you can be making all the mitzvah say, lecha, chicha, peya, it goes on and on and on, etc., etc. Who's stopping you? So he doesn't understand the entire thing. He says, I'm not going through all the details, a lot of details over here, but he says, la halacha, this of Chaim Cohen is not relevant. And therefore, as a result, it would seem that, according to the Abinazer's understanding of things, that even the Rambam would be maskim, there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. There's a very famous Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, that he writes Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, and he's not the only one who writes Aruch Chaim Palagi, writes like this, and others also write like that, that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, there's no need to count it. Why? Because it's a mitzvah that essentially encompasses Kol HaTorah Kula. It overrides everything. It's an overriding mitzvah. It's so significant, and so central, and so preeminent, that there's no reason to count it. It's elementary, my dear Watson. Are you familiar with Sherlock Holmes? You read all of his novels? Why not?
It's alright.
I missed that. That's what I thought. Sorry, you said earlier. Oh, Hashem. Wow. If you realize the my brain that we have of people in this yeshiva. Thank God, Baruch Hashem. So, just in terms of the issue of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, as you can see, just to summarize, what seems to be generally it's presented as a machlokes in the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam does not count the mitzvah. The Ramban clearly holds it's an obligation. Whether you interpret it as I mentioned earlier, Rabbi Soloveitchik's or the Soloveitchik brothers, the way they interpret it, is it a chiyuv? Is it a kiyuv? That's generally how they understand this machlokes. But even the alleged proof that the Ramban, that they want to bring from the Ramban, that the story is also not a proof which is really decisive at all, because the end of the Sifrei is not cited by the Ramban, namely that they were so, shall we say, in such a state of destitute regarding even the Havamina of living Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't bear it, they started crying, and they went back. So it's not that Chas V'Shalom, they left Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael has many, many aspects to it, and as I said, the Admor Misatmer, the Satmer Rav, who's a big tzaddik, a great tzaddik, and a great gong, his main argument against, if you will, establishing the government, the state of Israel, is based on the three else, the three shruas that the Gemara has. But as I indicated to you earlier, those three shruas, for many reasons, I gave three, but there are other reasons as well why they're not operative in terms of halachic, shall we say, halachic lemaisa. We don't have to abide by it because of the reasons that I mentioned. Number one, it's agoda. Number two, they keep their hand, their part of the bargain. And number three, as I pointed out, because of the fact that the Umos Olam, they accepted, they acquiesced to the state of Israel, the United Nations, League of Nations, San Remo Conference, or what have you, to call the Lashon of the Rabbi Simcha, Kvar Sor Pachad HaShruas. That's his Lashon. Kvar Sor Pachad HaShruas, the Pachad. The fear of Shruas is no longer relevant, has dissipated, no longer has the same kind of impact. Now, I just want to perhaps mention, since there's an article that I actually clipped from a sefer called Drashot HaRav. Drashot HaRav is Rabbi Soloveitchik. I'm very fond of Rabbi Soloveitchik. That's the understatement of the year. I want to read in English that which he writes. To assert that the land of Israel is central to Halacha is as obvious as stating that the Torah contains 630 commandments. And then the Rav writes that I have read published essays in which the authors contend that living in the land of Israel is not a central idea in Judaism. Since Maimonides does not count this as a mitzvah among the 630 commandments. The way he counts Kriyat Shema and Shofar, what I mentioned before. Rav Soloveitchik said, this is nothing more than vain sophistry. Shall I translate that? That means it's utter nonsense. Even if one were to maintain that this is the Rambam's opinion, the apparent omission of this imperative in the list of mitzvahs does not render it less important. For example, the Ramban, Nachmanides, does not count the first commandment, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzeira Le'eretz Mitzrayim. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt from the house of bondage. It's not counted by the Ramban, it's one of the 613 commandments. But he never deny that it's a central tenet of Judaism. Omission of a tenet from a list of mitzvahs does not imply anything regarding its centrality to Judaism. That's statement number one of Rabbi Soloveitchik. Statement number two, the Rav read opinions that living outside Israel was a better option for Orthodox Jews than living in Israel, namely Tina Jews. Because while Israel was allegedly rife, rife means pervaded by heretics, outside Israel one could create an insular ghetto of Tina and eliminate such outside influences. While advocates of this view, and I can say the same about New York, don't think I'm not just focusing on Tina. New York, Chicago, LA, they're all the same. While advocates of this view invoke strained proofs to buttress their opinion, the Rav says, I have the best possible proof to refute it. Listen to this proof. You have to appreciate halach a little bit when you have a celebration. With all the ghettos that Jews have created, from Brooklyn to Johannesburg to Gateshead. Anyone familiar with Gateshead? Where is Gateshead?
England.
Have you been there?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Gateshead is a very well-known yeshiva, and it's a very well-known city. So the Rav says, all those ghettos that we created, none was holier than the Levite camp, the Machane Levia, during the Israelites' 40 years of desert sojourn, the camp where Moshe Rabbeinu himself lived. Despite the kedusha, the sanctity of that encampment, Moshe, the most preeminent of the prophets, begged God, please allow me to pass and see the land, the good mountain and the Lebanon. That's the English translation. Beginning of Eschana. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to leave. Where? Gateshead, Johannesburg, and even Teaneck, New Jersey. As a matter of fact, some people in Muncie, their benching is the following. Uvnei Muncie, Yir HaKodesh, from here, Yom HaNegev. Are you familiar with that, Nusa?
I don't go to Muncie that often.
What was that?
I don't go to Muncie that often.
Ah, I see, okay. After how you describe Teaneck, I understand it. So he says over here, HaSolvetchik, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that even the holiness of the Levite camp did not approach that of the land of Israel. And if Moshe makes such a request, then the same request should be made, I'm reading his language, by all the purported saints of today who minimize the significance of living in the land of Israel. What do you say to that, Greenswinton? This is Rabbi Soloveitchik talking. Now it's true the Rav, I'm sorry. I apologize to you. Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's true, did not live in Israel. He lived in America with many other Gedolei Israel, and unquestionably, there's no doubt that they played a very significant role. I have a slightly biased view, that's what people tell me about Rabbi Soloveitchik. I don't think he's biased at all. I'm totally objective. I believe Rabbi Soloveitchik saved American Jewry, single-handedly. I believe he also saved the American rabbinate, single-handedly. And there were a few other rabbis here and there, nice people. There's some other very nice rabbis who also made a contribution. But I think he was the one who basically took his education, which was massive in nature, and was able to interpret Judaism in light of modern thinking and modern philosophy and modern concepts and give it a modern kind of matbea, which I think as a result of that American Jews are able to connect with, relate with, and as a result become the wonderful community that we have in Teaneck and Johannesburg and Gateshead. But I haven't said that. You see, even the Rav himself has a very clear position regarding Eretz Yisrael. Okay, I just want to mention, perhaps I'm not going to, as I said, overburden you. I wanted to mention actually two or three other things that I think are also very, very significant. There's someone in my shul, Rabbi Moshe Lichtman. Did he come here already? No.
Last year.
I'm sure he'll come again this year. He is a very well-known author, writer. He writes a lot, translates a lot. And so one of his books is called, you're all familiar with the expression, I think we say in the davening, Ki Mitzion Tetze Torah. He wrote a book called Ki Mitorah Tetze Tzion. What does that mean? He shows that every single parsha in Chumash, the idea of Tzion is central. From Brachos all the way till Rezos HaBracha. Every single parsha in Chumash has a reference to Eretz Yisrael in some form or fashion. Are you familiar with that sefer?
Yeah.
It's a green sefer, very nice sefer. I recommend it highly. sure, in your spare time, which is probably, you have no spare time, you're letting all day in the night, Baruch Hashem. One or two of us have some spare time, we'll be able to manage to even look at that sefer. It's really, as you say, even you're allowed to read it. It's not difficult, by any means. I think it's he shows the centrality of Eretz Yisrael in a very, really, I think, beautiful kind of way. So the reason why I mention all this is because those who are familiar, I'll just tell you, I have a connection with the rabbi of the old city of Yerushalayim. His name is Rabbi Avigdor Levinsohn Shlita. Very, really, what can I say, a great go and a great tzaddik. And so he, a number of times, has left Eretz Yisrael to go to the United States. So he told me the following. I heard this from him 3 or 4 times. When he travels on a plane going to Chutz Aretz, going to the United States, he sits in the back seat, the back row. Why? He wants to hold on to Eretz Yisrael as much as he can and as long as he can. And when on the way back, in the economy section, going to travel first class of business, I said, Rav Nosea business. That's what I told him. So I said, Rav David, stop with your jokes. Anyway, so he doesn't travel business or economy, so I make jokes with him. Anyway, so he travels in the first seat of the economy section, so that as soon as the plane comes to Eretz Yisrael, he can grab on Eretz Yisrael as quickly as he can. I asked him once, a number of years ago, he went to Chutz Aretz. He's in the, he was in Shivat HaKotel, now he's in Shivat HaTivarieh. Anyway, he's actually in both places at the same time. So when he came back from the trip, he left on Motzei Shabbos. There was a dinner. They honored him actually Sunday night at the dinner at Chutz Aretz. And Sunday night he left to come back to Eretz Yisrael. So I said, when he came back, I called him on Monday. I said, Harav, Echaya, how was the trip? So he told me, and I'll say it in Hebrew, then I'll translate it. Ein maspik mikvaot be'eretz Yisrael litaheroti mitumat eretz avim. I flipped that. There aren't enough mikvahs in Eretz Yisrael to purify me from the tumah of the United States. That's what he told me. I didn't know what to say after that. He said it with a straight face, quite serious. So he's a Jew who actually was born in Germany. He's a Talmud of one of the Doli Ador, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he doesn't know how to apart from Eretz Yisrael. I used to go for many years. I went to hear his sichot. How do you translate sichot? His shmuzin? Is that the right word? Thank you. I need your approbation. Anyway, so I went to hear his sichot, hear his shmuzin, for about 8 years. He would the shmuz would be from approximately 10 to 10:30, half hour shmuz, and then I would basically make him crazy for 2 hours. I would ask him this and that, discuss this and that and the other thing. Every silly, billy, narishkeit that I had in my head, I told him. And I noticed that first, right after the sikha, he would walk to the back of the yeshiva, look out the window which overlooks the Kotel of Maravi, and he would start crying. Literally start crying. He's a very spooky fella. I'll tell you a little story, if you don't mind. I heard this story from Harab Tabori. Rabbi Yom Tabori, Hashem should give him a refuah shlema. He was around in the Yeshivat Haaretz Yom. I used to play basketball with him. I was in high school in MTA. I once played basketball. It wasn't for me Bittul Torah, because I said, with that exercise, I'm able to learn better. How do you like that, Moses? Anyway, Kitzur, so Rabbi Tabori told me he went with him to Lebanon. They went to visit the troops, the Israeli troops, and each one of their respective yeshiva, one from Haaretz Yom, one from Yeshivat HaKotel, and Rabbi Nevinsohn, at nighttime they were visiting the troops during the day. At nighttime it was pitch black because, of course, it's a blackout since it was wartime. And they were basically put together in the same kind of bunk, if you will, two beds. And Rabbi Tabori told me he was exhausted. He quickly went to sleep. And he assumed Rabbi Nevinsohn went to sleep as well. Of course, he didn't go to sleep. Rabbi Nevinsohn, around 1 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden he hears someone on the floor moaning and groaning. He peeks out from behind the blind, couldn't see much, but he had a little flashlight with him. And Rabbi Nevinsohn is saying Tikkun Chatzos. He's crying on the ground saying Tikkun Chatzos on the floor of this place in Lebanon. Okay, that itself was spooky enough. This goes on for about another hour or two. They figure after that, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you go to sleep after a while. Rabbi Nevinsohn then takes out a fat Gemara and starts learning. And about Basikin time, he starts davening Basikin, Bidmo Shlish, with tears coming down his eye. So Rabbi Tabori Shlita, Hashem should give him a full shlema, told me, that guy is a spooky, spooky man. I said, keep away from me. I love Rabbi Tabori. Hashem should give me refuah shleima, and I love Rabbi Nevesov. Hashem should be marach yomav. Every time I speak to Rabbi Nevesov about Eretz Yisrael, I leave Eretz Yisrael from time to time. I went for a chasana. I didn't stop leave Eretz Yisrael. I also try to raise money for the yeshiva. I hope you don't mind. Stamp little Torah, raising money for the yeshiva, and going for a chasana. You'll have to do that too. Among the things I mentioned, every time I tell Rabbi Nevesov that I'm leaving Eretz Yisrael, he starts crying. I'm not exaggerating. The connection to Eretz Yisrael is something which is so fundamental to us and so basic. It's hard for all of us who come from Chutz Laaretz. I come from Chutz Laaretz also. I didn't live in Teaneck, New Jersey. I wasn't Zoche. But I lived in Masiv Doat, New York. That I did live. The city of New York. Amigo, yo hablo español muy poco. You have to speak the lingo. So I did live there for a fair number of years and a few other cities along the way. And it's hard to understand our connection to Eretz Yisrael. It's a connection that defies rationality, but it's all Tanakh. From Bereishis to Be'eni Kol Yisrael. That's the same Rabbi Lichtman Shlita wrote, Ki mitorah teitzei tzil. I hope and pray, yes Hashem, that in the course of this year, you'll develop a love for Eretz Yisrael. And halavai one day, I should, if you don't mind, I'll give you all a bracha, collectively and individually. Halavai one day, you should be zochah to make aliyah. And I'll tell you why we need you, all of you. Because you know what you'll introduce to the country? Moderation and balance. We need some of those qualities. I hope you don't mind. We need them desperately, and you guys can provide it. Because that's where you come from. That's what you're all about. Halavai should be zochah to appreciate Eretz Yisrael, to develop a love for it, to connect with it, to bond with it. And maybe, maybe, maybe one day Hashem will be mezakeh all of you to live in Eretz Yisrael.